Hey, podcast listeners, Tom here. I just wanted to preface this show with saying that towards the end of it, we started having some technical problems. My mic cut out, but we ultimately decided to leave it into the podcast version of the show just because it was a pretty weird, hilarious situation. You'll see when it gets there, but please bear with us on that. Also, I just wanted to thank all of you guys for sticking around and listening and giving us your feedback at pcgamer.com/podcast. Just through all the technical difficulties we've had, I know the last month or so has been rough with the RSS feed going up and down. The UK podcast went in there one week. It's been tricky, and it's mainly because we've been doing some back-end work on the site. But there's no excuses. It's been subpar, and I just want to say thank you for sticking around, and we're going to try to bring it back to baseline normal as quickly as we possibly can. Enjoy the show.
Also doing good. Thank you, Tom.
We are coming to you today over Skype rather than in the studio in the office because everybody is gone this week. It's like James is out, Tim and Evan are off. I just literally flew in this morning from an event I'll be telling you guys about next week. Chris, you're always gone, so we just threw you in here because you're actually one of the more present people.
Yeah, I don't really move from the spot very often.
you got your dog, you got Hank. What else do you need, right?
That's it. Just my dog.
Basically all. But it's going to be a great show today. We still have got some quality PC gaming conversations to have, even if it's over mics and headsets. We're going to be briefly talking about Blackroom again, which we brought up last week on the show, but almost immediately after we talked about it, John Romero announced that they were pausing the Kickstarter. They were temporarily suspending it and going to be making a demo. So we're going to be talking about that a little. We'll also be talking about a lot of big game announcements. Dawn of War 3 just got announced on our site, actually. And there's an exclusive all about it in this month's magazine as well. So if you're a subscriber to that, you'll get some first look at Dawn of War. Then we'll also be talking about Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, which might be less exciting to a lot of people, but I still think it's a worthy thing to discuss on the show. And along with the space theme, today is May 4th. May the 4th be with you. It's Star Wars Day. So we're going to be talking about Star Wars and potentially a new Star Wars action game coming from Respawn that just got announced today in honor of that holiday. And then, of course, we'll be taking your questions from Twitch chat at the end of the show. But first, let's start with what we've been playing lately, what we've been getting into. Chris, you haven't been on the show in a while, so let's start with you. What have you been playing?
Well, I actually just started Roller Coaster Tycoon World, which is in early access right now. It's the long-awaited sequel or next game in the Roller Coaster Tycoon series. So haven't spent a lot of time with it. I played it for a few hours. And it looks like it's shaping up. I haven't really formed much of an opinion. Like I said, it's early access. I think there's a lot of optimization that needs to happen. I started in a very small park, and even with just a few rides and maybe a couple hundred visitors. It was a bit, I don't know how to, what's the technical term? Herky jerky, I guess I would call it. Little herky jerky.
Yeah, that's a technical term.
That's what you hardware guys say, right?
Jerky. Oh yeah. It's in the manual. Yeah.
So I think, you know, there's some way to go on that, but, you know, otherwise, it works pretty much the same. You know, you have a little park, you put in rides, you set the prices, and you kind of set the theme, and you do some management stuff, like you need to have a mechanics for when the rides break down. You need to have janitors for when people get off the rides and vomit all over your pathways. My main thing it's kind of been bothering me. It's a little hard to put my finger on, but it just doesn't look, when I say it doesn't look great, it looks okay. But there's nothing particularly charming about the art or the visuals. There's not really, it feels like it just doesn't have a style to it. Like when I build rides and everything, that's all fine. And then I look at them, I'm like, I'm not excited to look at this thing I've built. It's just a little lacking, I think, in style. It kind of made me think of H1Z1, which, you know, again, it's not a bad looking game, but there's some sort of lack of style to the characters, the animation, the architecture that doesn't really, you know, I don't really sit back and go, this is my beautiful, awesome park. It's just like, here's some stuff. So that's kind of one thing that's the main thing that's kind of lacking for me, is it just visually doesn't really look spectacular, I think.
It's tricky. It's tricky with that game too, because everything it does is going to be just compared to Planet Coaster instantly. And Planet Coaster is a game that has a personality to it from what we've seen so far, at least in like all the mascots and like the people are very like, they're kind of Pixar-y people rather than just normal humans.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, if Chris had seen Planet Coaster and what your take was on the two of them stylistically.
Yeah, I haven't tried Planet Coaster yet. I've watched some videos, and Andy Kelly, I think, had some hands-on time. And maybe that's the reason the visuals for Tycoon are maybe not impressing me, is because Planet Coaster does have this real kind of style to it. It's kind of cartoony and kind of appealing, and I just don't really feel that way about the new Tycoon. I think it's lacking something visually in the animations and the visitors' faces. You know, like you said, the mascots. I think Planet Coaster definitely has more of a visual pop to it, and you know, the colors and the art style, I think, look a lot better in Planet Coaster.
Which is a shame for the people working on Roller Coaster Tycoon, but you know, Planet Coaster, it looks good, and I think everybody is excited about that one. Kind of a wah-wah for the other guys, but they're gonna do something to step it up. You know,
it's interesting. It's almost like another City Skyline Sim City moment, where the long storied IP that, you know, forged the genre back in the day is like falling flat. And then the new guys, or not even the new guys, cause I mean, you know, it's Frontier, but the off brand game, I guess is the way to put it, is actually the one that's impressing people.
Yeah. And it's still, you know, it's still early days for both. I think it's more going to be about how the game works and how the simulation is and how, you know, how much fun it is. But I mean, just right off the bat, I think you have to, I mean, you do want something that is fun to look at if you're going to be looking at it for, you know, hours and hours on end. And I would just say right now, it doesn't look like the Tycoon game is really particularly fun to just watch as things happen.
Yeah. Well, what about you, Wes? What have you been playing? Still on that Dark Souls?
Yeah, so I'm still on Dark Souls. I haven't played a lot of anything in the past week, mostly just kind of chipping away at Dark Souls. I'm in the catacombs now, and I got a bit stuck in there on a couple tough enemies and losing a bunch of souls and then going back to get some more and then losing those. I played a little bit of Crypt of the Necrodancer last night, which was actually the first time I've played that game after hearing great things about it and believing that it was really cool, and just I hadn't played it. But I was hanging out with a buddy who loves that game as well as a lot of other roguelikes. And so I played it for a little while and then watched him clear up to the final boss, which he lost on. But it was a pretty good run up until that point. That is such a cool game. Have either of you played it?
I haven't, but I really want to. They just added some tracks to it, right?
They put out a big update. I don't remember precisely what was in it, but yeah, they put an update out within the past 2 weeks, I believe. It seems right up your alley, Tom. I don't know exactly why I say that, because I don't remember you having a particular thing for music games, but it is, you know, as good a combination of a music game and a roguelike as you would expect.
Yeah, it's I guess it's not the music game that appeals to me. It's the art and the attitude and the roguelike part. I do love roguelikes.
Yeah, I mean, it really does feel like, you know, if you look back at old school roguelikes where everything moves, you know, one kind of tick when you move yourself, you can trace that lineage up to, you know, games like Binding of Isaac, which take like the layout of the dungeon and sort of the style of randomization and have modernized that. And Crypt of the Necrodancer really just takes that original concept and puts it to a beat and makes every enemy movement pattern and everything based on, you know, based on that beat. So it's a really similar concept to those older games, but you're taking away the part where you could sit there and think about every single move for as long as you wanted, you know, very strategically, and then just like move on a rhythm, you know, constantly keep moving and know when to step, when to pause, when to attack, that kind of stuff. It sounds harder than it really is to get the concept. Like, I do not have a great sense of rhythm, but I was able to pretty quickly pick up the pace at which you have to move in that game. So I would definitely recommend it to any roguelike fans.
Yeah, I'm going to have to cave and just get that game one day. It's one that just keeps popping up that I just always want to play and never do.
I'm curious how the game works when you're playing to your own music, because it does have like a beat detection system where you can just import, you know, whatever track you want into it. The default music is great, so it's not a game where you're like, yeah, I'm going to have to use my own music with this because the stock stuff isn't very good. It's really, really fun music. But I'm curious if you put in some Enya or something, like what kind of experience you would get out of that.
I was thinking Brian Eno. He just did like, if anybody familiar with Brian Eno?
A bit.
They're
music for elevators, right?
Yeah, he's got songs that's just like, where it's like one beat every like few seconds. Like just really slow, drawn out songs. Give you enough time to think in that game.
Might make the game a lot easier, yeah, I don't know.
That's a weird idea. I've been playing a good amount of Duelist. We just put out my review of that game, of Duelist, for the first time yesterday. I mean, I've talked about it a lot on the show, but I finally, you know, it's finally came out officially last Wednesday, and I only got to put a number on it and that sort of stuff. So I've been playing a lot of Duelist. I've also been playing more Heroes of the Storm lately. Just added Tracer, you know, which is the first character they've added from Overwatch. She's like really weird and cool. Chris Thurston over in the UK wrote a whole piece about how the fact that Tracer can move and shoot at the same time is like really weird and subversive within a MOBA, and it like really, really is. Like, Wes, I know you played Smite, right?
Yeah, I played a lot of League of Legends and then a decent amount of Smite.
I was talking I was discussing with someone about how like on paper Tracer just like is a nightmare of a MOBA character, right? Like, because blinks, like flashes, are one of the strongest things in a MOBA, like by far. And she's just got three of them base, and then another one that protects her and recalls her back. And she's got her ultimate at level one, and she's got the moving and attacking thing, and she doesn't have mana costs. And it's just like this why would you ever do this sort of character that's actually comes out really, really fun and admittedly overpowered on launch, but they just nerfed her, so so Cadbury in chat is saying, do you think that Tracer would get nerfed? And yeah, they I think either have or are about to nerf her.
Does sound really, really powerful.
I mean, yeah,
like in League of Legends, you know, a couple characters would have like two blinks or a blink that you can then return from, mm-hmm. you know, and that's maybe you're going to get killed, when you blink into the enemy team, but usually you're also going to get a kill when you do that as an assassin type character. So it's pretty freaking powerful.
Yeah, it's oppressive if you can get it off. And the flip side of it, of course, is that she's a glass cannon. Like if you lock her down, well, if you stun her, because her recall can get her out of roots, but if you stun her, she can just melt. And part of that is that they gave her incredibly high health regen because she would just get chunked down so fast that, like, you needed to have the higher regen just to keep playing the game, basically. She was just a lot of fun. Occasionally, Heroes of the Storm does this weird thing with me where I play it a lot, and then I take a long break from it, and they release a new character that's, like, weird or unique or just strange for the MOBA genre, and it makes me want to get back into the game, and it makes me just, like, want to keep playing it. And maybe that'll only last a couple weeks or whatever, but Tracer's the type of character where, like, Tracer came out, and I just want to keep playing Tracer now. I want to play that game more because she's in it. I think it's a really good testament to just how solid their character design and their hero design is in that game. But let's jump right along into the meat of the show, and we'll start with our first topic is John Romero's Black Room, which is the first-person shooter that he is making. For those of you not familiar, John Romero is the creator of Doom, one of the creators of the original Doom, and Quake and Wolfenstein, legendary FPS designer, started a Kickstarter for a new game called Black Room, and within a couple days, it was pretty evident that it wasn't getting the support that it was hoping for, I suppose. You know, it got like $100,000 in 24 hours, which it was, you know, in the scale of Kickstarters is not very much.
Yeah, they tend to be really front-loaded and end-loaded, right? So if you haven't made a good chunk of your goal within the first, like, 2 days, it's going to be a bit of a slog.
Yeah. But they recognized that, and they bailed. And they canceled the Kickstarter, and they said they put it on pause. And basically what they're doing is they are waiting until they have a demo. They are making a playable demo of the game, and then they're coming back and they're gonna relaunch, assuming, and once people can, like, see what the game actually is, because they were selling it all on, like, basically concept art and, like, not even very fleshed out concept art, just, like, you know, here's some ideas, which, you know, certain Kickstarters have succeeded on less, but it's a hard sell nowadays. The first thing I wanted to ask, though, is, Chris, Wes and I were on the show last week talking about Black Room, but, like, what was your initial impressions of Black Room as a Kickstarter, like, assuming it hadn't gotten canceled? Were you on the hype train?
Not really. I mean, there wasn't really much to... I mean, there were some descriptions of it, but there wasn't really much to see or look at. It felt to me like it was really banking on the names of the people involved to kind of get everyone fired up and see this, you know, try to set the internet on fire. And it was pretty clear. I mean, there was definitely money coming in, and I think they would have reached their goal, but it wasn't this big, you know, it wasn't like everyone throwing their wallets at the screen type of thing. You look at other Kickstarters, I mean, Pillars of Eternity, I think they asked for $1 million, maybe 1.1 million. And within 24 hours, they surpassed it. This looked like it was going to be, well, yeah, that's cool, it's great to hear, but it wasn't this, I wasn't like, oh my gosh, you know, I watched they had this little video where he hands the keyboard over, you know, Star Wars style, and even that was like, oh, that was a cute video, but I wasn't like, yes, this is really happening. I don't know why. I think maybe if they'd had a bit more to show up front instead of just like, hey, we have an idea, Can we fund just based on this idea?
And you can especially look at something like, and obviously this is a little different because it was at the Sony press conference at E3, but like the Shenmue 3 Kickstarter asked for $2 million, and I think it raised it in like a matter of hours.
Yeah.
It just blew up. So yeah, they weren't reaching that level of success, and I think you're right to say that they were banking on the name to a large extent.
Yeah, and I mean, Black Room doesn't mean anything to anyone yet. I mean, if, let's say, you know, Bethesda and id hadn't done a new Doom game, and then Romero came along with a Kickstarter, it's like, it's the next Doom, that would have been funded in 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. But Black Room, it's like, Okay, we don't know what that is, and you're not really showing us what it is. We know you guys, but we don't really know much more. So I think it was just a lack of stuff for people to really get excited about, other than just sort of a general idea of, you know, this veteran, these veterans are getting back together kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we talked about this on the show a little bit last week, but the last game of this type that John Romero delivered was Daikatana. You know, I think he had some input on a couple other games after that that came out, but that was like the last game that he designed, you know, in the FPS vein. And yeah, he did Doom and Wolf 3D, and those are amazing, but that's a really long time ago. And if you look at some of the other really successful Kickstarters like Pillars of Eternity, Obsidian has made great RPGs in the past 5 to 10 years, you know, not 25 years ago.
Yeah. It's funny how much he has to live down Daikatana still, isn't it? Like I personally don't remember that game at all. I didn't ever play it. I didn't probably even have an opportunity to play it. But it's still, like, one of the things people bring up as, like, John Romero made Daikatana. I don't know if he's, like, still got it, you know? And it's like, oh, man.
You know, it's a bad game, but it's not – I don't, like, hold it against him in the sense that I'm like, I don't think John Romero can make shooters anymore. It's just that he hasn't made one since then, you know? So it's – I think he is well capable of it. I think he probably still has a good sense for design. Like, no one has a perfect track record. You know, there's always stuff that just doesn't go right. But when that's the last game you have to look at, it's kind of hard to imagine what his next game is going to be. So I'm really excited that they're making a demo now, because if they can come back with something that just shows a hint of potential that is, you know, the modern version of what they were delivering 20 years ago, you know, that's I'll back that, you know, I'll be excited about it.
So what happens if they come back with a demo and it just looks like garbage? Like, you, Chris, you said you thought that they might actually make the $700,000 Kickstarter mark if they had kept the campaign going. And now if they come back with a demo that's bad, they probably aren't going to hit that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. It would be, you know, it would be kind of, I'm sure, disappointing if they came back with their demo and they still kind of limped to the finish line. A lot of times I think, you know, these Kickstarters, they ask for X amount, but they're really planning to get two or three times that, and they've got all these stretch goals, and they, like, yeah, we're going to ask for this so it doesn't seem like we're crazy, but we know that fans will keep pouring money in. I don't know what Pillars of Eternity eventually wound up with, but it was well over what they initially asked, and you see that with a lot of Kickstarters. But if they're, you know, if you're planning a Kickstarter and you're asking for half of what you know you need, hoping that fans will keep on piling money, you know, if you even if you're funded and you don't get all that extra, you're going to wind up in trouble, I think. So
yeah, there was a Kickstarter that I backed. Actually, it was for a board game or a card game a while back, where they reached way more than what they had asked for, even. And the company, like, I got a Kickstarter update probably a year after I had received the game. Like, it was done, right? It was in my hands. It was a great product. And a year after I had received the game, I got this random Kickstarter update email that was like, hey, everybody, like, you're probably wondering about these stretch goals that we came up with and, like, this, you know, game we said we were going to make and the, like, digital version we said we were going to make because of the stretch goals. We're not sitting on our pile of money, like, rich, not doing any of these things. We're bankrupt. Like, and they were just straight up like, we underestimated the cost of everything, and even though we way exceeded our goal, we completely ran out of money. So, yeah, I think that the goal of Kickstarters can often be really deceptive as to how much that's actually doing. And it's the same with thing like Fig, where, like, Psychonauts 2 raised, like, what, like, $3 point something million, but they also had probably millions more in investors and other things and other places.
Yeah, and I mean, the only game I've ever backed on Kickstarter was Broken Age, and we know how that went. They made far more than they had asked for or planned. Sorry, my dog is barking. and, you know, so then their scope expanded, and then they wound up with not enough money to actually finish, and then so they had to sell the first half to fund the second half, and it's all very tricky business.
Yeah.
I think Hank wants to be on the show this week or go catch a squirrel.
Someone rang the doorbell. I think Amazon was delivering something. So he's all freaked out.
That's a big event, ringing a doorbell.
That's, yeah, around the here.
Excitement of his day right there.
Well, we can jump along then. I didn't want to spend too long on Black Room. I just think it's interesting that, you know, the day after we talked about it, it was like, oh, never mind, it's canceled. We
kind of said, like, we really hope that they show us something.
Yeah.
So hopefully they're going to come back and do exactly that.
Apparently they got the message, so. I mean, that's one of the things that they said of why they were pausing it was because, like, they said, we got the message. Everyone was asking to see more than just concept art, so we're going to do that. Well, we can move along. I think a lot of people are excited for the next topic. Dawn of War 3 just got announced. Very, very exciting. It's been a long time coming, and on top of that, it's kind of surprising that amongst the onslaught of Warhammer games, this had not been announced yet. You know, we've talked multiple times about how there's like dozens, literally dozens of Warhammer games coming out, and Dawn of War 3 was one that a lot of people were calling for. For those who aren't familiar, Dawn of War RTS, right? Or, excuse me, Warhammer RTS. Did either of you guys play either of the first two, or excited about those?
I've played some Dawn of War 2. Honestly, not a lot. I had a couple friends who really liked those games, and I didn't own them when they came out, but I played like some LAN stuff with them a couple times. And Dawn of War 2 was really cool. I didn't play enough of it to totally grasp it, because it's a very different RTS than the typical Command & Conquer or Warcraft kind of paths that those games go down in terms of the way you collect resources and manage your units and that kind of stuff. It plays differently than those games, so I was kind of a little shell-shocked, I think, the first time I played it, and I also didn't have any Warhammer attachment, so I was like, oh yeah, this is really cool. I don't know what's going on.
that's fair. I like that 40K is getting another game too. I think that we've seen a lot of good just regular Warhammer games recently, like with Vermintide and Total War coming out, which I really enjoyed at PAX, and I think it's neat that we're getting another spaceship or space marine game, because Battlefleet Gothic came out and was apparently people enjoyed. I never played, but like it still misses that space marines fighting aliens or space marines fighting orcs sort of vibe to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's such a fun thing about Dawn of War and just the Warhammer 40K, you know, series in general, is you're just totally mixing this weird melting pot of space zombies and space marines and fantasy and sci-fi and all these different tropes just like mashed together, and they're all decapitating each other.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? Are you you weren't much of a Dawn of War 1 or 2 guy?
No, I wasn't. I don't have much to contribute to the news. Other than that, it looks really cool.
Yeah.
What I think is going to be really interesting is just seeing how Total War Warhammer and Dawn of War 3 each handle, you know, a being a new strategy game coming out within the span of, you know, a year from one another or so, and how they handle the Warhammer licenses and what, you know, how they play in comparison and what parts of their, you know, their respective lores they really pull from to establish like the most important mechanics in those games. Like, even I'm not really a Warhammer guy. I've never played the tabletop game, but so I don't have a lot of attachment to the lore, but I'm really just interested in seeing what those games use from that lore to get me excited about the different factions and the different units and everything that, you know, you're going to get from an RTS.
Yeah. And it's two very different kinds of RTSs between them. Like, not just fantasy and space, but, you know, Total War is so much of, like, a slower, methodical kind of RTS, whereas the Dawn of War games, you know, they weren't as fast as something like StarCraft, I don't think, but, like, they're in that class of RTS.
And from what I recall, you're going to do more micro in Dawn of War than you are in Total War. You know, Total War is about the whole battlefield with thousands of units on it. And then, you know, even removed from that, there's the turn-based layer of, you know, just managing your civilization and building up your empire, the campaign map stuff that's even, like you said, even slower paced, whereas Dawn of War is going to be much more focused on, you know, your base and building and controlling it, you know, smaller groups of units.
So, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, although the one of the words or used to describe it was more accessible or most accessible Dawn of War game yet, which I think has some probably longtime fans a little worried when you kind of hear that, you think like it's going to be maybe a stripped down, maybe not requiring as much strategy or brain power or less complexity. So I don't know if that's something that either of you, if that concerns either of you guys when you hear about a sequel being more accessible.
That's always a word that scares people. I think usually it turns out to be not really as much of a concern as people make it out to be. I think they said that about Dark Souls 3. And in some ways, Dark Souls 3 is the most accessible Souls game, but it is not holding your hand. It is not, you know, especially easy. So I think it depends on the details of what that means. You know, being more accessible could just mean like they did some really simple interface changes to make it more obvious, like what units you're selecting and how you select them, and like selecting groups of units, and you know, maybe your enemies always attack with one color of, you know, laser or whatever, and your units always attack with another color, like Overwatch, and so it's just really easy to tell, you know, where damage is going across the battlefield or something like that. Or it could mean, you know, stripping out complexities and features, and in that case, that's a bummer. I guess too early to say at this point.
I mean, I'm always a huge fan of simplicity, and obviously that's a line you have to walk carefully, but it's one of the reasons I think I'm really often drawn to Blizzard games, is because they really like just distilling controls and like concepts down to a very simple form. If they made Dawn of War more accessible in like by simplifying systems, like that could be a really, like you were saying, Wes, that could be a really good thing, or it could be like dumbing down. And it's a careful line you have to walk. But we'll see. I think it might also just be marketing talk to a certain extent, because like it's hard to sell an RTS in this generation, in this day and age, you know, like RTS games are big and complex and scary, and like have fans who, you know, RTS fans are hungry for more RTSs, and that's awesome, but how do you get a new crowd to get back into the RTS genre, which is on an up and up kind of lately, but overall it's in a slump. So maybe they're saying it's more accessible just to try to get people interested in it. You know, there's probably a group of people who are like, oh, that's an RTS. I don't have time to learn that, you know, and move on.
Yeah, I mean, MOBAs really kind of ate their lunch when they realized they could take a lot of the complexity you have in an RTS in terms of like the team battles and all the different abilities that are being brought to bear at the same time, but you only have to control a single unit and all of the skill is in how you use that unit. And RTSs now feel very overwhelming for people when it's like, no, you have to control the whole map worth of units. And I miss old school Command and Conquer games. You know, I really want to check out 8-bit armies that some of the people are talking about in chat right now, which is from Petroglyph, which is basically old school Westwood developers who made the Command and Conquer games, which are my favorite RTS games. So I really want to check that game out. And I hope there are more games that are kind of able to break into the RTS genre and find success again after the past, I don't know, 5, almost 10 years. It's been a fairly dead genre with just a couple breakout hits.
Yeah, we constantly mention Grey Goo as like an example of how RTSs can thrive nowadays if they find their niche.
Do we? Did Grey Goo perform that well? I mean, I'm not criticizing the game, but I don't know that it was a smash hit for them.
Maybe it wasn't a smash hit sales-wise, but it was pretty universally praised as, like, a return to form for RTSs, basically. What just came out recently? Offworld Trading Company just left early access, you know? So, like, there is... that's kind of a different take on the RTS genre, but it's that's coming up as well. I mean, it's gonna be tricky for them, I think, to be pitching this to people.
I think Warhammer fans are hungry for these games, despite how many of them are coming out these days. Maybe because of how many are coming out, because there's just a lot of stuff with the Warhammer brand slapped onto it. And not all of it is good stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think seeing a Warhammer 40K game and you're like, fuck yeah, Warhammer 40K. And then it's like kind of a crappy turn-based strategy, you know, mobile game or something. And you're like, oh, I really wish that was the Warhammer 40K game that I wanted. You know, I think they are in a good position to knock it out of the park, which is kind of what I think Warhammer is going to do, too, is deliver a game befitting of that license at a real scale that people are looking for. So hopefully that's what Dawn of War 3 manages to do. We'll see.
I think the real problem with all of these RTS Warhammer games is that you can't paint your units. Like,
that's a good point.
Come on.
I actually asked the Total War Warhammer developers about that at E3 last year. At Tim's request, because Tim grew up painting his Warhammer figures in exacting detail. That was a big thing for him. And so he's like, ask him about being able to paint the models. And it's not something they're going to have in the game at launch, but they were like, they said, yes, we are aware that that is something people are, you know, that Warhammer fans really love and care about. So I'm kind of hopeful that that's something that they'll add in. I don't know if it'll happen, but it would be smart. There are people who definitely would want to do that.
That'd be hilarious if they made like a whole separate game that's like an Art Academy model painter for the units in Total War or Dawn of War. Just be I can dream, I guess.
Hey, if they did like paid mod support and somebody made a mod utility that was just like a graphical user interface for customizing the 3D models, man, yeah, they would make bank on that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, that's actually something that we can discuss real quick too. This is a little off topic, but since you brought it up, there's rumblings about paid mods slowly coming back to Steam, right?
Well, I don't know about slowly. I mean, I think it would be a flick of a switch if it happens.
Right.
But yeah, there was a rumor a couple weeks ago. Someone posted that based on some stuff they had seen in some Steam like update files, that they thought paid mods were going to come to Steam when Fallout 4 launched its like mod utility, which I believe has happened in beta now, and And Bethesda is also doing their Fallout 4 mod stuff through their own website. So I'm not sure if that rumor is going to pan out or not. But I think they're going to try again at some point.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they probably should. The first time they tried was a disaster, and I think probably deserved to be. They sprung it on everyone. It was not policed. You couldn't have done it in a worse way. But I would still like to see modders who, you know, would like to try to make a living with mods, have a few more options. From the sounds of it, you know, they can obviously set up, you know, Patreons or donations, but from what I've heard, people just really don't donate very often, myself included. So it would be nice to see some sort of option and done well, implemented well, done fairly. And I'm sure there's a way to do it. I don't really know what it is, but I don't think it's this end of the modding community as everyone sort of screamed last time. So I think it's worth exploring. I would hope they're still exploring it, and hopefully they'll actually put some thought behind it this time and figure out a way to make it work.
And I do want to keep talking about that, but just real quick, somebody in the chat did point out that in Dungeons, you could paint your armies. So there you go. Hopefully that functionality will come back, or maybe even creep its way into Total War. To be clear,
when I said you weren't going to be able to do that, that was in Total War Warhammer, not Dawn of War 3. I don't think we know whether that will be in Dawn of War 3 or not.
Yeah, but the interesting thing to me about this whole discussion around paid mods, just to continue on that for a sec, is that there's a conversation being had right now, which is, I think, something that was a key factor missing from the first time they put in paid mods. They didn't give anyone time to talk about it. They just said, here it is, it's a thing, it exists, you can do it now, go buy stuff. You know? I think that the fact that the community and the internet have a chance currently to just talk about what they would like from paid mods, what they wouldn't like from paid mods, what they're afraid will happen, what they hope will happen, I think that discussion before it gets implemented is critically important to people accepting it no matter how it ends up. So I'm really happy that people are discussing it right now.
The biggest problem I think they had when they launched with Skyrim was when the baggage of a community that has already existed for years, there's a lot of complications there, but the biggest one is not all modders write all of their own code and put it up, you know, completely with like clean and clear lines of ownership for what they've done. And that's not such a big deal when everything is being distributed for free. But when suddenly one person is trying to charge $5 for the mod they made that uses code somebody else made, that gets messy really, really quickly. And if you start with a blank slate, you know, when a game launches and does not have a whole library of mods already, you're circumnavigating that issue, right? And you're able to police it from the beginning instead of, you know, just jumping into the hornet's nest, basically, which is what they did.
Yeah. It'll be interesting how it plays out. Chris, did you have something you wanted to say?
I did, but I forgot what it was.
Cool. To finish up on Dawn of War 3, like I said at the beginning of the show, this month's PC Gamer magazine is going to have a whole spread about it, so you'll be able to get that if you subscribe or if you just buy it individually, whatever. We're going to have a lot of early info about it. I'll also post the link to our early coverage of it from the site, but you can always just go to pcgamer.com/dawn-of-war-3, all of those dashes in there. And you can see what we've talked about it there, especially given the people that are covering the game for the site and the magazine have a little bit more experience with the series than we do. I don't know about Wes or Chris, but I'm just excited about the game and the prospect of it and really wanted to talk about it. James is in the chat. James, who's off at home with his parents. is saying happy Star War.
And way to make James sound lame there, Tom.
Why?
James is at home with his parents today. Had to stay home from school.
He couldn't come and play.
Yeah.
James is on vacation. He's probably drunk on Montana beer right now, so he's having a good time.
That's where I think we all wish we could be, is drunk on Montana beer. But let's jump along to a potentially less exciting topic than Dawn of War 3, which is the new Call of Duty. I know I sold that really well with that transition. New Call of Duty got announced earlier today. Earlier this week. Weirdly, the new Battlefield is getting announced at the end of the week, so we don't know really what that's going to offer.
I don't know how weird that was. That might have been some very deliberate timing on one or both of those companies' parts.
Yeah, probably. I guess nothing is a coincidence, right? But it's called Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. They're just admitting at this point that these are going to keep coming forever, and they're naming the game Infinite.
I don't know. That says to me this is the last one, right? That's how names, video game names work.
Wouldn't it be amazing if this was like...
They've got to be done with it after this.
It'd be amazing if this was like actually the ultimate... Like, they were just being very clear, and this was the ultimate Call of Duty, and it was crazy mod support, custom levels. They were just going to consistently update the game. It was going to be, you know, this forever thing by saying Infinite. But no, it's probably just going to be a space Call of Duty from the looks of the trailer. And I don't really know how to feel about it. I enjoy the title because it's got an Infinity Ward joke in there. Being made by Infinity Ward, it's Infinite Warfare. That had to be intentional.
It's dangerously close to Marvel copyright, probably, with the Infinity War. Maybe that's why they got this one out the door this year, because if they put it out up against the next Avengers movie, Marvel would probably sue the shit out of them.
Maybe it's a tie-in waiting to happen.
That would be an interesting crossover. I bet this is the last like future or modern Call of Duty we get for a while. I bet next year it goes to World War II or some past war, you know, Vietnam or something. But I bet it's World War II again.
Well, there were a lot of rumors that they were going to go back to World War II soon.
I would put $5 on the next one being a World War II game. I think they're going to go back because it's been long enough. And no one has really been making World War II shooters that genre has finally kind of recovered a little bit, I think, from the overpopulation.
You don't think they might return to a more modern day, current time shooter?
I don't know. I mean, so the next one will be Treyarch, right? If this one's Infinity Ward. And Treyarch are kind of the getting to do whatever they want these days. But they did Black Ops 3. I don't think they're going to make a Black Ops 4. I feel like they're probably done with that. Although I say that having not played Black Ops 3 and having no idea where that story goes. So it's totally possible that there was a cliffhanger or something that I don't even know about. But I feel like they're going to go back to the past. Or maybe they'll do a crazy time travel World War II game or something weird. I don't know.
Panzer in the chat. Says Call of Duty Treyarch Forever will be the next game.
Maybe they'll do a Call of Duty Primal and they'll have like caveman warfare.
Shit, I'd play that.
With no guns.
Like, what's the turret sequence level?
You got like a pile of rocks and you're just throwing them one at a time.
All right. That's not quite as cool as I was thinking it could be. But maybe if you're throwing rocks at like saber-toothed tigers as they leap at you.
While riding a mammoth.
And there's a volcano exploding in the background because you can't have, you know, exploding barrels in the past, but you can have.
Right. You have to have stuff blow up, maybe, yeah, or meteors hitting or something like that.
Meteors, that's it. It's the beginning of the Ice Age. Humanity's going extinct. Call of Duty, Ice Age, 2017.
And they could tie that in with a movie series, too. See, this is all cross-promotion.
We're just giving away ideas.
They've always just been missing that Ray Romano flavor and that John Leguizamo flavor. Like, those are the two things that they've really needed all these years, is just Ray Romano's boring, sleepy ass voice for the main character. That shit's exploding all around him.
They had Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, but Kevin Spacey's a good actor.
Okay, that's fair. That is a all right.
I'm trying to talk shit about Ray Romano.
He's got a grudge and he's gonna live it out right here.
Yeah. So, did you guys even watch the trailer for Infinite Warfare? Or read up on anything about it?
A little bit, yeah.
I watched it. I read Tyler did a little trailer deep dive breakdown deconstruction. It does, you know. Yeah, it's fantastical. You're in space. You're flying spaceships, but it's not so fantastical. There's not aliens. It's human versus human. There's no sign of lasers. It looks like everything is still bullets. So it's not quite, you know, full on sci-fi stuff. It's hard to say. It's grounded when you watch the trailer and see spaceships flying around dogfighting, but it looks like they're still trying to maintain somewhat of a, you know, gritty combat type of feel to it without going, you know, completely outer limits or anything like that.
They haven't gone full Moonraker.
Yeah, no, it's not quite the whimsical attempt at being, you know, Star Wars. It does look like it's probably a Call of Duty game, but in space, and maybe there's, you know, mech suits and that kind of thing.
The ship flight sequences, the space flight, like dogfights, looked really, really cool to me. Like, it didn't look at all like Call of Duty, but those dogfights in space were like, that was appealing.
Yeah, I mean, it looks nice. It's hard to tell, like, am I really free to pilot a spaceship around and in some real outer space simulator, or is someone flying and I'm just sitting there at the turret shooting? It's hard to tell.
Right.
I guess it does show you steering, but it's hard to tell is like, am I really, can I just fly around or am I kind of going to be still on a rail as these games kind of are?
So there's also the Modern Warfare remaster that's coming out at the same time or very close in proximity. I don't know if did they put specific dates on them?
I think that the Modern Warfare remaster is actually going to be, like, it's not being sold separately, I thought.
It's bundled in.
Yeah.
I from what I read, yeah, the multiplayer was linked with it, but I honestly didn't pay too much attention to the details of how they're going to be selling it.
Yeah, it's interesting that that's coming with it, you know, and it's just like, it's strange that they are, to me, it's strange that they are still going further into the future. I didn't think they would go space. I just thought that that was not like a frontier that Call of Duty would take on. And I'm not sure why. I just didn't think that it made sense for the game.
Well, they got to crank out a new one every year.
I suppose, but I thought they were just going to go back to, like, World War II, like you said, or, like, someone in chat said, Gettysburg, you know, like, too old school, or something like that. I didn't think that they were, like, the last Call of Duty game felt so much like Call of Duty Future, that this one just feels like Call of Duty More Future, which I guess, you know, you can also make that More Call of Duty More Future. Like, that's basically the name of their game at this point. I don't know. I'm not unimpressed by it, but they've given me nothing to convince me that this is going to be like the Call of Duty that changes their ways, you know? Oh no, we lost Chris, but he'll get back on soon.
How generous of you, Tom. Like, the game hasn't not impressed me, but it has not impressed me.
I guess it's the truth. It didn't give me anything to really want to make me want to play it. Like, when Assassin's Creed announced that they'd be taking a year off, and like taking a break, reevaluating the series, it made me more interested in playing the next Assassin's Creed game. But the fact that Call of Duty has just totally not broken step here doesn't give me any reason to think it's gonna, like, I'm gonna enjoy this one when I didn't enjoy it.
You know, the most interesting thing the Assassin's Creed series has really done over the years is just fully committed to exploring interesting time periods, you know, with each successive game. And they've had varying degrees of success with that due to story, mechanics, you know, some of them have had their issues for sure, but the goal there has been really noble, right? Like, I was really excited for the American Revolution stuff in Assassin's Creed 3 until it just ended up not being a very good game around that setting. But I'd be okay seeing Call of Duty really embrace that same concept and just fully committing every year to a really cool setting, whether it's, okay, we're going to go full sci-fi with this one and we're going to make Starship Troopers Call of Duty. You know, we're going to fight some fucking aliens and just take it to them and like be a big dumb action movie. And then next year we're going to do a Civil War game, you know, and next year we're going to do like, I don't know, we're going to do the Pacific Theater of World War II or something, you know, like committing to those time periods and actually making a really interesting game around that setting is, I think, a good way to justify there being a new Call of Duty every single year, more so than they have managed to do recently. Tom, are you there?
Did we lose Tom? I don't know. I got lost for a minute there too.
It's all falling apart.
It's all falling apart. Yeah.
Well, without Tom, we can just, I don't know, I could make fun of Ray Romano some more.
Well, I missed part of the conversation about the Call of Duty. I guess you don't want to recap. One thing I know it's kind of an easy series to kind of sneer at in some ways. It's very linear and it is like a big dumb action movie. But whenever I kind of feel like I'm being a little hard on it, I always try to remember I have this friend and he does play games. He just doesn't play games the way I do. He's a really demanding job. He's on the road half the time. And when he has time to game, like, he just wants to sit down and play. And, like, you know, open world games, the kind of games I like, those are, like, nightmares for him because he might have an hour inside of a week to actually play a game and to be wandering around in some open world, you know, digging around in his inventory or not knowing exactly where to go or taking a half hour just to get to the first thing you have to do. Like, that's a half hour for him is like half of his gaming time for the week. So these Call of Duty games, you know, you can just jump in, you follow the dot, you shoot the other dots. And they're fun. They're just not, they're typically not, you know, that deep or that complicated. So I think they're perfect for him. You know, he'll play maybe two or three games a year and they're franchise games. You know, it's like, hey, new Call of Duty, doesn't read reviews, just picks it up, buys it, plays it. That's how he games. And it's a lot different from the way that I do it. And I think most of us do it, or a lot of us do it. But I think it is great that there is this series that looks amazing, that is fun. And I think we hear Tom trying to come back.
Yeah, no one's been able to hear anything you've been saying, Chris. It was a really impassioned speech.
Oh, no. Oh, well.
Chris just changed the world, world's opinion of Call of Duty, and it was all lost.
Maybe, I said maybe nice things about Call of Duty.
Yeah, the Illuminati won't have that. Can't have that.
Good. Well, I swear you to secrecy about how I just gushed over Call of Duty. And what an important series it is.
Tom, are we back? Yeah.
Yes.
We can hear you. Can you hear us? Well, I think the whole stream went down. I think the audio for the whole stream went down. Because they could... I don't think they could hear us. Oh, okay. someone was, okay, I guess I'm wrong. Someone was saying they couldn't hear anything, so I thought the stream was dead.
You just call our listeners liars? You just accused our listeners of being liars.
Well, they can't hear you.
They say they can't hear you, but they're liars.
Fucking love Star Wars. Let's talk about Star Wars. I just realized that statement sounds weird and came out of nowhere because no one can hear Tom say, "Do you want to talk about Star Wars?"
So we can hear Tom, but they can't hear Tom, but they can hear us.
I think that's the gist of it, yeah. Yeah, so Chris and I will just talk about Star Wars while you troubleshoot, I guess. You can make, like, TIE Fighter symbols with your hands or something so people know that you're in on the conversation. Yeah, there's not really much to say about it. Respawn is making a Star Wars game, Respawn being the developers of Titanfall, for people who aren't familiar, former Infinity Ward folks for the most part. They're going to make a third-person action game. It's Star Wars. I guess it'll come out in like 2 years.
Well, that's not much to go on, but I'm sure it'll look cool because Titanfall sure looked great.
Yeah. They said they're excited to make one. All right, mic check for Tom. Who can hear Tom?
Raise your hand in the chat if you can hear Tom.
Hey, you liked it? That's your full review? It's pretty good?
Yeah, pretty good. Just check it out if you haven't seen it.
Some good Chewbacca in there?
He was kind of sidelined a bit, I thought. I was not feeling the Chewbacca.
I mean, when has Chewbacca...
Well, it is okay. We'll keep it going. Well, I can gush about it too. I finally saw the last Star Wars film very late when it came out digitally because I could buy it without actually having to get off the couch. And late to the party, but yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, you liked it. That's your full review. It's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Just check it out if you haven't seen it.
Some good Chewbacca in there.
He was kind of sidelined a bit, I thought. I was not feeling the Chewbacca.
I mean, when has Chewbacca ever had a major role? Usually he just hits stuff, you know?
Yeah, but he got hurt, and then he's just sitting in a corner for a while. I don't know.
His mane looked great, though, right? I mean, it was really lustrous.
Yeah, he looked great, Wes. Don't worry. I like Chewbacca.
Also had one of the best scenes in the movie where the nurse is like, "I'm sure you were very brave," or something to him. Just patronized the fuck out of that giant dog man. That was fun.
I liked it. I thought, I don't know, I felt it kind of jumped very quickly from like, this is a serious moment to like, this is a madcap comedy moment. And it was kind of like, oh, they're suddenly being very kind of slapsticky, but it was still, there was still some actually funny stuff in there. And
yeah, that's one thing that I really have liked about a lot of J.J. Abrams movies. I think he's done really well in... He did pretty well in Mission Impossible. He did really, really well in Super 8, of taking a movie that was not at all a comedy and just letting the natural character interactions and good writing just bring a lot of comedy into scenes that could have been very unfunny in other hands, you know, played very straight. But just letting the characters just feel like friends and feel like they're joking around, you know.
And Tom is holding up a BB-8. So we can hear Tom, everyone. You can't, but we can hear it, and it is a goddamn racket in his house. There's like so much yelling.
Yeah, Tom, just mute.
Tom,
just
can you mute yourself for us?
You have totally ruined this episode. Good job, buddy. So beyond the new Star Wars games that are coming out that we really don't know anything about the respawn one, and also the game from from Amy Hennig. Tom, what the fuck, dude?
I can't believe Twitch can't hear Tom. It's like, it sounds like they're destroying his house. He's got a workman there. There's drills. There's power saws. And he left his mic open. And only Wes and I can hear him, apparently.
Tom, just mute your
Tom, so mute, mute yourself.
Star Wars. Get out of here.
What was our last topic? Yeah. Yeah, we'll do the Q&A.
I'm going to say a couple more things about Star Wars, though, because we don't have anything to say about the new games because we don't really know anything about them at this point. Maybe we'll see Amy Hennig's game at E3, maybe not. But right now, a lot of the classic Star Wars games are on sale on both GOG and Steam, and they're like 78% off or something on both of those services. So if you haven't played Knights of the Old Republic, Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast, like those kind of games, go play those games, buy them. You can get like every Star Wars game ever for like $30 right now, basically, on PC. And there's some really good shit in there. Definitely play KOTOR 2 and Jedi Outcast. Those are the ones to, play.
And Dark Forces.
And Dark Forces, yeah. I actually wrote an article on the site about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, about replaying Dark Forces and Dark Forces 2 and just observations of playing those games in 2015, 2016. And they hold up reasonably well, you know, like they feel pretty archaic, but Dark Forces still has kind of, it feels like Star Wars, which was quite an accomplishment for the time. With the technology that they had. And Jedi Knight does a really great job of giving you this arc of becoming, you know, becoming a Jedi, basically gaining your Force powers. The way you gain them is kind of ridiculous because you just, like, find secret rooms scattered around the levels and then, oh, you're a Jedi after you do that for a while. But by the end of that game, when you're using Force Leap to, like, jump, you know, halfway across a room and up on top of these massive objects and pulling weapons out of stormtroopers' hands, like that stuff is really satisfying and really fun. And that was a game that came out in 97, I think. 90s, yeah, around then. So good shit.
Yeah, it's a good time. It's a really good time right now for older Star Wars games. If any you missed or any you are want to just check them out, it's a great time. Everything's on sale and online. I'm looking for questions here.
Oh, and Shadows of the Empire just came out on GOG, so go relive that. Anyone who is my age played that game when they were 13 or so, and kind of liked it, I guess. It was cool at the time, for sure.
And on our site, we bumped up for Star Wars Day. Chris Thurston wrote the complete history of Star Wars on PC. That's right up on our site right now, and he goes through pretty much every game. So if you're looking for one to play, he's got a rundown of all of them. And then I also bumped our best Star Wars mods, which are mods for games that are not Star Wars that bring Star Wars elements into them. Sometimes it's just, you know, new skins or new sounds or, you know, Blade, you can play with Star Wars characters, Arma 3. So there's all sorts of stuff on our site right now for Star Wars Day.
Evan did a great series a couple years ago called Diaries of a Droid Jedi, I think was the name, where he played Mountain Blade all Star Warsified, and it was just a total shit show of droids and Wookiees and Twi'leks and stuff just wailing on each other in like big melee mobs. That was really fun.
Yeah, I played a prison architect mod that kind of turned the prison into like the Imperial Death Star type prison. It didn't really. I mean, it was just basically just replaced a bunch of skins, but I had like a Wookiee friend. I was playing not as the warden, but as a prisoner trying to escape. So I had a Wookiee friend, and we basically tried to tunnel our way out of prison, which we did. Here's a question from Twitch chat. Is anyone in the PCG office still occasionally using VR headsets, which is probably a good question for Wes?
Yeah, so the last time I used the Rift or the Vive was to review Chronos, which I really, really liked. I thought that was a great game. I haven't played with either one since then, so it's been about 2 weeks for me. James was using it some last week for an article he was working on. I don't think any of us are really just using them for fun at work, just to like kill some time and do stuff in VR. I wouldn't consider that an indictment of the technology, just more so like we've been very busy. And we haven't, none of us have been actively reviewing any games on them the past few weeks. So we haven't been using them a ton, but they still get the occasional use. I hope the novelty isn't just like a thing that's going to wear off and then we're not going to care about them anymore. But I used so much VR to write about the Rift and the Vive that I was kind of ready to take a break myself. And everybody else has been pretty slammed. So not a whole lot of use, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, since there aren't quite so many people out there who've got them yet, and there aren't really quite so many real, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of games when I look through Steam, a lot of VR supported games, but there's not a lot of, seems like not a lot of really big ticket games, nothing that anyone's going like, you have to play this on VR immediately type of thing. So I think it's going to be a bit of a slow kind of roll out, both for the hardware and for the games. Probably slower than we maybe would have expected.
Yeah, I mean, each company has had issues with their rollout, whether it's like credit card system stuff, shortages, production problems, that kind of stuff. It's been kind of a mess, unfortunately.
Someone asks, did you guys review Job Simulator? I know someone played it and wrote it. Was it a full review?
Yeah, Tim wrote a review, our EIC. He enjoyed it. He thought it was fairly brief, and while a lot of fun, really charming sense of humor to those games, you're probably to the mini games rather, you're probably not going to want to go back and like replay most of the jobs more than once or twice. So it's kind of a better game to have friends over and show them, and you know, they'll find it delightful, but it's not something you're going to keep playing for hours and hours and hours.
Impressions on the Deus Ex trailer, which I didn't watch. Did you watch it, Wes?
I didn't watch it either, actually. I'm okay. Excited about a new Deus Ex, but I just missed that trailer. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I was thinking like I'm really looking forward to a new Deus Ex and Dishonored 2, which I saw, we found out this week is coming out in November. I was like, ah, man, November, I gotta wait all that time. I guess I probably knew it was going to be that late in the year, but I was hoping something maybe this summer, because Dishonored is still one of my favorite games. So I'm looking forward to the next one.
A bit ago, someone asked in the chat about the Alien Wasteland 2 debacle. Have you seen this? You know what they're talking about?
I don't know.
In Exile, who made Wasteland 2, Brian Fargo's studio, sent a cease and desist to this indie guy making a game called Alien Wasteland for using the name Wasteland in the title. I think it's unfortunate. I don't know how much you can really blame In Exile for it, because they were in talks with them beforehand, so they didn't just like immediately threaten to sue them. And my understanding of like trademark law, which is just the stupidest, most complicated shit imaginable, is that if you don't defend something like that, you will lose the ability to defend it. And then if you lost the ability to defend it, there's nothing stopping somebody from making, you know, Wasteland 3 or Wasteland blank and kind of trying to associate it with your property. So it seems like, you know, they probably legally took the right path there, but would anybody really confuse this other studio's Wasteland game with Wasteland in the title for, you know, a Wasteland RPG that Brian Fargo makes? I don't think so.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like something that would really confuse you. I mean, it's not like Wasteland is a word that they made up, you know, like Minecraft or something that is being used by someone else. It's just a word. So, but it's you kind of understand both sides. You feel bad for an indie guy, and you kind of understand, well, if you have to defend your copyright, well, I guess I understand that. It just, it's always feels like a really unfortunate situation.
Yeah.
Oh, Tom is talking to us, by the way. Go ahead, Tom. Sure, Tom. Tom is just talking to us. Sorry about that, folks. You couldn't hear him.
Speaking of Tom, our subscriber JBJ Blaze asked, is there anything right now that we would like to say in general or about a game that we couldn't say with Tom on the line? Chris?
Gosh. I don't know. I think I respect Tom's views on games, as far as I know. I mean, I don't enjoy some of the games he plays. I don't really understand anything about Hearthstone except that he can't pronounce it properly. but I honestly, Hearthstone is something I love reading about it. Like Tim and Tom, when they write their Hearthstone articles, like I don't understand what the hell they're talking about, but it's kind of like reading, I don't know, science fiction or something. Like hard sci-fi, I don't really understand the terms. Like, wow, that sounds really cool.
It's just like all proper noun dumps, right? You're just like reading the names of 14 alien races and their different like body appendages, and you're like, I have no idea what any of this shit is, but it sounds cool.
I can't think of anything. What about you, Wes? Can you think of anything you'd like to say about Tom's?
I'll just say Blame Tom 2016. It's kind of a theme we have around the office with a hashtag, so if you ever are just having a bad day or having a problem with something, feel free to tweet at Tom, Blame Tom 2016, because he probably deserves it. That's all I'll say about that.
And just to make sure everyone knows that Tom is in a documentary about Quidditch. I think it's on Netflix.
Yeah, Tom's actually more badass than either of us when it comes to athletic capability.
No kidding. He seems like, a really pleasant, friendly young man, and he is. But if you watch this Quidditch documentary, he is a badass. He is a real, no-fooling badass.
When the bow tie comes off, shit gets real.
Yep. Taking the tie off instead of taking the gloves off.
See, did we get any other questions in chat? Someone asked about Battleborn. I don't think either of us have played Battleborn yet.
No, I have not.
I'm a little surprised that some of the reviews have been positive, just because it seemed like the general feedback after the beta was pretty negative. But you know, if it's a good game, that's great. I hope people enjoy it. I think we have someone working on a review, but I don't think it's up yet.
Sometimes that's what you can do with negative feedback is actually maybe listen to it and make some changes and address people's issues. And that's what betas are for. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe they really saw what their issues were and did some corrections.
Yeah, totally. If we don't have any other questions, we can just wrap up in the next minute. The movie is Mudbloods, by the way, if you didn't catch the name that Tom is in the documentary. Go watch Mudbloods if you want to see more of Tom.
And it's a good movie, too.
Or see the side of Tom that you don't get to see here at the PC Gaming Show. The R-rated Tom.
What else does Tom usually do to wrap up? He says a bunch of things like, check out our go to our YouTube channel. I don't know. I'm not really paying attention to Tom at the end of the show.
Yeah,
we write our website at PCGamer.com.
Is that our URL?
You can see our Twitch show right here. That's useful information for you. What else does he say?
If you're a podcast listener, apologies for everything that Tom screwed up this week. Blame Tom.
Yeah, blame Tom. Yeah, next week, you just need to spam the chat for a bit with Blame Tom 2016 hashtag. LOL Kappa. Who?
No, we can hear you.
We can hear you. Can you? Hey, here's one more question. When is the ETA for the site getting fixed? We have been kind of switching over. We have been switching over, as you probably noticed, to a new system. We do have some issues. They're slowly getting fixed. I don't know the ETA. There are some issues you can tell just by seeing the site, but they are working on it. We'll get it all sorted out.
Yeah, it's not going to be one day it's not fixed and then the next day it's fixed. There are going to be just improvements every single day for the next few weeks, probably, before it kind of gets up to the point that we're, you know, completely happy with it. But there are, you know, engineers working on it every day to fix issues, fix presentation bugs and stuff like that. So it'll get back up to full capacity before too long, we hope.
Yes.
We can wrap it up. I think Tom has a dead microphone on his hands. So thank you guys for sticking with us through a technically tumultuous episode. Happy Star Wars Day. Go play some Star Wars games if you haven't already. You can find us here on Twitch at twitch.tv/PCGamer. You can find us on Twitter at PCGamer. Our website is, shockingly, PCGamer.com. And we'll be back here next Wednesday to do this all again. I'll be really sunburned because I'm going to Hawaii after this.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll look like a lobster next week if I'm on the show.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, or watching. I don't know how to actually end the show. How do we end the show?
Listening and watching. We have to wait for Tom to press the button.
Tom needs to yank all the rest of the plugs out of the computer.